calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
It is another episode of Tuesday Timeline. I'm Elliot. He's Ben. Ben, we're still in New Jersey. What'd you do for the week?
Oh my God. Well, let me explain something. I was watching the first of all, hi, welcome to the PNC Progression Wrestling Podcast, episode 12 of Timeline Tuesday. But here's the thing, folks. These people are just, wrestling is going nuts right now because we have Sensational Sherry, because we're time traveling. So remember, we're back in 1989 still. Sensational Sherry and Hulk Hogan has to watch out for her because she's stirring a potion that's getting ready to kill him.
I remember that. Just, oh my God, the vignettes and the whole backstage segment with like acting like a witch and like stirring a pot.
It was like, holy crap.
You
know, so
oh my God.
I don't want any voodoo curses cast on me once we review this show, but
that's funny.
You know, and the thing is, when I was stumbling to get my words out earlier, it's because I was honestly just struck speechless by this promo. So I was trying to emulate my reaction to what I was looking at one point in this pay-per-view. But in all seriousness, as Elio said, tonight we are reviewing SummerSlam 89. I certainly hope you're enjoying this series. I sure as hell am. I know Elio is because he gets to give me these history lessons and he gets all excited and has.
I'm sure you have. We have questions for the professor.
Yes, I do actually. So with that in mind, no. Without further ado.
Hold on. Before we do that, I do have results over the weekend from New Japan's shows. The Road to the New Beginning. We are from February the 3rd, 4th, and last night.
Yeah, and remember, folks, the reason why we're doing this is because we're covering the April show, and that's going to be Mustafa Ali's debut with the company. I also saw somewhere that he's going to debut for TNA. At some point very soon. I forget the dates, but I'm excited for him especially because, you know, he was always one of my favorites in terms of talent and just criminally misused in WWE. So I'm excited to see what he can do with this run in New Japan.
Hold on, this is only the first half of 2024 because once we hit May and then June, July, August, that's the G1 Climax. Then we have the NGPW Junior Tag Team World Cup and all that stuff. It's going to be cool. So that's going to be some fun stuff there. Those are fun shows.
Absolutely. And hopefully Elio has decided to spare me. Actually, I don't have to say hopefully because I know he did. He's not gonna make me sit through tag team match after tag team match,
No.
Leia. Because we
I will have to do that for the junior tag league because that's all it is tag team matches. But I'm not gonna make you watch like the kickoff shows because there are tag team matches on there. I'm just gonna point out the one or two matches that I thought were good.
Very good.
Or I'll run down the card for you and then you decide which one you're gonna watch. You can like I'll send it to you.
Okay. Cool.
All right, so for February 3rd, the main event was the team of LIJ versus just five guys, which ended in a countout draw, so they restarted the match. And LIJ defeated just five guys.
Who are the just five guys?
Just five guys is made up of Taka Michinoku, Doki, Yuya Uemura, Taichi, and Sonata.
Okay, I cannot believe Michinoku is still doing it. That is so cool.
Now,
I remember him from like 97, 98. That's awesome.
Ben, you're gonna have to help me. I can never remember this team's name. Bullet Club. What are the names? Drilla and Clark Connors. What are the names again? Bullet Club.
Bullet Club War Dogs.
Jesus, I can never remember that. That's why I was
Okay.
like, no, wait, it's not Wolf Dog, it's Ward. Okay.
No,
February.
you're getting it confused with Bron Breakker and
I
Bullet
know,
Club,
I know.
which I can understand.
Okay, so February 4th, they were in Corken Hall, and we had the title change because the team of Jerome Maloney and Clark Connors, Bullet Club War Dogs, defeated Francesco Hira and TJP to become the new IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions.
I'm sorry, you faded out just a little bit on the first part. Who was the first team?
So, Bullet Club War Dogs, Drilla Maloney, and Clark Connors defeated Francesco Hira and TJP to become the new IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions.
Oh, okay. Very good.
And February 5th, they were back at it in Corken Hall with Faction Warfare, LIJ defeating just five guys in the main event.
Man, they certainly are repetitive with their matches, which
I'm
it.
telling you, that's why I said I'm not gonna read every single match because I'd just be repeating myself.
Yep.
And they have another show tonight, February 6th, and I'll have those ones for you on Saturday.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
However, before we get into SummerSlam 89, we must go to the movies.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
All right, Ben. So I'm going to the movies and I'm gonna go see this new one that just came out. Canadian icon and legend, John Candy. This is Uncle Buck. And let me tell you, this guy is one of my favorite actors. I love his
Yeah.
movies.
So let me ask you, because I've seen the vast majority of them. Which one is your favorite?
I love Uncle Buck. But I can't really pick a favorite. I like them all. Like Great Outdoors. The one I didn't like is Splash, which I watched last night.
Which I haven't seen Splash yet. But I think that's one of the only ones that I haven't seen. Because The Great Outdoors is still on my DVR. It's I think it's been there for close to a year now.
Go find yourself a spin cycle.
Exactly. I love that one too.
All right, so here we go with Uncle Buck.
Where do you live?
City.
You have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
Buck Russell had always been the black sheep of the family.
I'm stunned that I'm related to you.
Until one night.
Buck, we have a problem with the kids. We're stuck for somebody to watch them.
Oh, please, not that.
Can I trust him?
My brother, for God's sake.
I don't want to let him get into that Satan stuff or any of the new chicks. I'll leave that for me.
Wow.
I'm kidding, huh?
Now, he's making them breakfast.
Cigar?
No, thanks.
Making them lunch. And making them crazy.
What did you do?
He's irresistible.
And I want to ask you why I'm so attracted to you.
I wouldn't even guess at that.
Oh. 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 Oh.
He's unbelievable.
I'm Anita Orgar.
I'm Buck Melanoma. Molly Russell's ward.
He's...
Would you just... Let
John Candy. As Uncle Buck.
What does he like to drink? I've been leaving the toilet seats up. Is that what the blue water is? It's not good for him, huh?
Uncle Buck, the new comedy from John Hughes.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid, that's my job.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Oh, man. I had never seen this trailer before.
I don't think I've ever seen the trailer, to tell you the truth, but it's great. You know, it's just, I love John Candy. It's a shame, you know, that he died so young, but you know, as the saying goes, the greats do die young.
I bet there's like, okay, people have way too much time on their hands because they have a theory about Home Alone and John Candy's role in the movie. It's really weird. I found a video about it just explaining it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So here we go. This is like really... I swear, some people with their theories, which I kind of like these movie theories, but some of them are like out there. Here we go.
Is Gus Polinski actually the devil in Home Alone? There's a fan theory out there from Drew Gar on Reddit that this lovable John Candy character is not just the Polka King of the Midwest, leader of the Kenosha Kickers, writer of Polka Polka, and numerous other hits in the early 70s, a man that was huge in Sheboygan. He is indeed the devil, conveniently placed to steal Kate McAllister's soul. While stranded in the Scranton airport and desperate to get home to Chicago to see her son, Kate is causing a ruckus at the counter. Gus, being the devil, notices her in distress, moves in closer to listen in and see just how far she's willing to go. Kate then says, "If I have to sell my soul to the devil himself." At this moment, the devil can officially jump in and act. The devil then offers Kate a ride to Chicago, which is what she was willing to sell her soul for. She agrees, essentially selling her soul. Gus smiles. The deed is done. Perhaps this airport had some special supernatural power. Maybe she stumbled into an alternate dimension for this to take place. After all, that is Elvis behind her in line. Scranton Airport is essentially a crossroads when you look at it on a map. There's a myth that you can give an offering to the devil, in this case her soul, near a crossroads. You can also point out the ironic twist of fate that usually accompanies dealings with the devil. In this case, it's the fact that if she stayed in the airport, she would have arrived home at almost the exact same time, essentially selling her soul for absolutely nothing except for a terrible ride home in the back of a van with some polka bombs.
What?
What? Okay, my head's about to explode. Now I know for a fact I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Jesus Christ. Good Lord.
What is going on with people? Oh my goodness. Like, I gotta read up on a lot of these other ones. They're just like really out there. Like, one about that on Full House, Michelle Tanner was the devil, and that's why no one ever left the house. I'm like, okay, relax. So that's Uncle Buck. I love that movie, but Ben, yeah. It is now time to get into SummerSlam 1989. Feel the heat. All right, local time here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It's 8 p.m. We are at the Meadowlands Arena. Ben, what do we have on tonight's card? I know one dark match before the show was Dino Bravo defeating Coco Beware.
You know, I was actually really surprised that Dino Bravo was on the pre-show. But yeah, when you told me that right before we hit play, I was like, you know, yeah, I would have remembered if he was on the main card because Frenchie Martin is very distinguishable. So that was interesting. Did you find it weird that Dino Bravo was on the pre-show considering how much he was being pushed at the time?
I did because I don't, I'm not sure if he said the last time we saw him, he was in a program with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And on the February 3rd edition of the main event, he had a flag match with Hacksaw Jim Duggan prior to the live show, which only featured two matches.
Why would a live show only feature two matches?
I don't know, the main event, it went from 8 till 10, and that was it.
From 2, they had
eight,
two matches.
Eight till 10, yes.
Both matches must have been epic wars then, my God.
I mean, they had Ted DiBiase versus Hercules and the Mega Powers versus the Twin Towers. So that was the main focus of the show.
And we'll get into the Hercules match because my God, that was just horrific. Before I go off on any tangents, Elio, just be aware, Professor Canella, that I do have some questions because
I was just gonna say, as we go down the card, I know you have questions for me, so as we go down this card, give me your questions.
Cool. So first things first, before the magic got started, we were introduced to the show by the announced team of Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, I knew this, but it's just weird to see Tony Schiavone in WWE.
Yes,
he was only there for a year, but is it, you know, I'm so used to seeing him in WCW. It was like, what? So that was
it was the same with me for WrestleMania 5 because I remember watching the countdown to WrestleMania 5 when it aired live and seeing Tony Schiavone. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Tony Schiavone's in WBF. What?
Yeah, that's that threw me off too.
Yeah.
I have to give them credit because Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura were playing off each other marvelously to start the show.
Yep.
And I mean, if you think Jerry Lawler got pumped up at the beginning of Raw or when the ladies would come to the ring, I don't think he had very much on Jesse Ventura at the time because Jesse the Body Ventura seemed like he needed to have some tea and sit down. You know, he was very pumped up. So we'll get into some of that because that actually does play into the show a little bit. But the first match was, if we were doing the traditional format of high points and low points, if this was a regular weekly show, this would definitely be a high point for me because both
match of the night. A match of the night.
Yes, I 100% agree with you. We had Brainbusters versus the Hart Foundation, and I'm like, more of this, please. Now, it's important to mention that there was something very different about the dynamic of the match, because usually the first thing I noticed, folks, was usually in Bret Hart's career, he plays the baby face who takes the majority of the beatings from the heels. And then Jim Neidhart comes in and wrecks everything and kind of saves the day. And then, of course, Bret is a wizard in the ring. So, but it was a little bit different because the focus was on Neidhart. They were doing a very good job of, like, talking about the brainbusters of, like, tag team wrestling. And they did a much better job of selling the difficulty with the tags and stuff like that. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. And then Tully Blanchard, you know, I wish I had seen more of him in WWE, but he of course had his own problems at the time. But I mean, this match was just technical wizardry. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's the best match of that I've ever seen, but it was very, very solid. And I'm just not used to seeing Bret Hart in those scenarios where he's the one kind of saving the day. Yes, he did take his fair share of beating. But it was just a little bit different. So I was like, whoa. But unfortunately, we do have to take our first break. I know we just got on not too long ago, but the Zoom recording is already kicking us out. So we'll be right back. Stay right back.
All right, and we are back. We're going to continue with SummerSlam 89. Are we done the first match or is there more? Anything?
No, there's a little bit more, yeah.
All right.
So this match was, like I said, very, very good. However, I would be remiss if I didn't admit that there was a little bit too much fuckery. At the end, because I was so confused as to what was happening, because there was so much going on. So the ref ended up being distracted by Bobby Heenan, a big shocker, because at this point,
why that no good weasel.
Yeah, because by this point his team was really in peril. So of course, he started getting up and distracting the ref and blah blah blah. But the issue, and of course this was done on purpose. It wasn't like it was a botch, but but it was very obvious to the viewer that when it was time for the pin, Hart wasn't the legal man. Because fighting had spilled to the outside you know, which led to the distraction, you know, and then, you know, so it was just, did I like that finish? No, but did it make sense for that time frame? Sure. You know, and the character work and the work of the announcers and explaining and really playing into the matches is fantastic. The commentary on these shows has been really, really good. And like I said, it really adds something to the card and helps me understand what was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, this was obviously match of the night for me because I'm a huge fan of both these guys, or both these teams, I should say. Arn Anderson's my favorite, you know, old school wrestler. And by old school, I mean for my time frame. But still a badass. But yeah, definitely a high point. Moving on, can we talk about that Dusty Rhodes promo? Like, you know, it's just classic Dusty, you know, and he's obviously talking about the match, but just his mannerisms, like, it's so, like, we would call it weird and like fruity, and like if my mom and dad had walked in, they would have been like, what the hell? But you know, because he's in the polka dots and he's got the, you know, the cap on, looking like he, you know, came from a certain kind of club in the 80s. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just classic Dusty. If you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love it. You know, you're going to get your booty kicked. Like, who says that? You know
what I mean? All right. But this was kind of a random match, though.
Yes, and, well, I'll answer my own question. The New Day used to say booty, which I'm so glad they don't do that anymore.
Right.
And they're more serious, and so, but Dusty, it worked. But the match itself was kind of just, it felt very random. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you,
there was no program between these two.
Like, it wasn't very good. But it was done to get Dusty over, because this was his arrival in WWE. So I get it, but
did you ever see his vignettes before he debuted?
No.
Okay. Let me see if I can find one here, because the one where he was playing a plumber.
I have seen that one. Yeah, the one where he's a plumber. Yeah,
that one's the best out of all of them, because I've seen all of them, but that one was the best.
Right, and I 100% agree. So the next match comes with a caveat, because, you know, you really can't rate this match, to be fair, because it's Mr. Perfect versus the Red Rooster, and I know that that's like, what the fuck, and you know, when Terry Taylor comes out, the Rooster, Terry Taylor, he's got the red chicken thing on top of his head. It's just like, it's like the worst fucking, it's just, no. Between that and the gobbledygooker, but what the hell? So, but the reason
while you're talking, I'm gonna go look up Red Rooster, see if I can find anything like on like where they got that. Go ahead.
So, but it was really a non-match within a match, because it went like 3 minutes and 21 seconds. But the reason for that was because he had a knee injury and really couldn't go. So he missed several months of action after this. And judging by Elio's mannerisms that I'm seeing as I'm talking, he found some information and he is not happy. Take it away.
Okay. In 1988, Terry Taylor signed with the World Wrestling Federation and made his initial debut in a house show, defeating Tito Santana on July 10th in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Tito Santana, oh my, that in and of itself is a crime.
3 days later, he made his televised debut as babyface Scary Terry Taylor.
And he's a babyface? Oh, shit.
He teamed with Sam Houston against the Conquistadors on the August 1st airing of Primetime Wrestling. After Houston was pinned, Taylor got on the mic and berated him for losing the match before attacking him and turning heel. And Taylor soon acquired Bobby the Brain Heenan as his manager, which rebranded the Red Rooster, a gimmick which some donned red tights and raincoat, and later as babyface, style his hair like a rooster's comb and strut like a rooster.
Holy crap. So it wasn't just that one. It was a string of bad gimmicks. Well, there you go with the 80s, folks. You remember how people used to say that the WWE was cartoony? Well, there you go. But even with that short match, you could see how good Mr. Perfect was gonna be and was.
Yep.
So after this we had a very famous interview. But this was the edited version. And what I'm talking about was, this is Ravishing Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan getting interviewed by Gene Okerlund before his Intercontinental title match versus the Ultimate Warrior, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. But, you know, you guys probably know, because you guys are hardcore wrestling fans, if you're listening to this, this was the interview where they had that botch where the sign fell down. But of course this was an edited version, but for some reason, when Gene actually swore, it made it onto the air, like at the time, but it's just weird. I found that funny because it's such a famous, interview. And Gene Okerlund is so good. So good. If you haven't seen it, you just have to see it to understand what I'm talking about. But up
I
next,
think I know which, yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
I can send you a YouTube video.
I know which one you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Next up we have Tito Santana and the Rockers versus Rick Martel and the Fabulous Rougeaus. And this is interesting, because remember at on our last show, mm-hmm. or a couple shows ago, we went over how Rick Martel turned heel.
That was the last show, WrestleMania 5.
Exactly. And so this was a play into that, or a continuation. And so obviously they were like, Santana was trying to get to him, and of course Martel was like, no, I don't think so. Can I just mention something? Mm-hmm. The 80s hairdo just was all over this show, and it was just, wow.
I have a question. Did 1-year-old Ben Pierce have 80s hair as well? Come on, no. he had to have had that hair kicking. Come on.
I was still one, but it's all just right. if I had had that hair, I think I would have made a very big fuss, because even to this day, it looks good on other people, but I've just never been one to dye my hair and do all that mm-hmm. stuff. But here it's just it's just funny because it's the 80s and it's so obvious between Tito and Rick, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So this, I think this one got a little bit convoluted, and a little bit confusing for me. It was exciting. And I'm not saying it was a bad match at all, because that's not accurate, right? But it was very storyline focused, and they were really trying to get Martel over as a heel, which obviously they were successful with, because of the model Rick Martel having a very respectable run as that character. He's definitely the most remembered for that.
Hold on, Ben?
Yeah.
How many stories did you see in this match?
I mean, I saw like at least two, because the way the WWE did six-man tag matches, so they, back in this time frame, is they would have a tag team and a tag team, and then a singles guy and a singles guy, right? And both pairs were having feuds with each other, and obviously the heels on one side and then the faces on the other. So it comes off as random if you don't understand the dynamic of what's going on.
Now, did you understand what we have, the Rick Martel and Tiffany? Do you understand the other feud?
Yes, because I had seen what was going on in prior shows.
So you know about how Shawn Michaels was attacked by the Russos.
Oh no, I was just talking about based on what I was seeing in the match.
Oh no, I'm talking about these specific teams.
Based on what I was in the storylines I was seeing on the air and the explanations, I understood that there was significant heat between the two tag teams. So that was perfectly clear. So it wasn't weird. And then surprisingly, it was Rick Martel and the Fabulous Rougeos that won. Because the heels usually don't triumph over the faces, at least in this part. Now, it's, oh my God. I will say, right, Tony Schiavone was very present throughout this match, in terms of voicing his displeasure over thinking that Michaels was the legal man. And we saw that in the last, in the first match we talked about, the first tag match, was where there was all that confusion. Like he was very vociferous. I'm like, calm down, you know. And it was just a it was a nice playoff, because of course you have Jesse Ventura being the classic heel, kind of thing. You know, this was a nice setup for this was a nice setup for what we would see as, you know, the Rick Martel character. So, I mean, was he great? It wouldn't be fair for me to say yes or no, because I really haven't seen enough of Rick Martel to make a thing, but I'm not a fan of the gimmick personally. So that's what I got to say about that one.
Oh, wait till we get to the 90s and you see more Rick Martel.
So, just so I'm not talking throughout the entire thing, what did you think of the matches so far? Like,
So far, the first match, Heart Foundation, was a match night for me. The Dusty Rose was random, perfect, and Rooster was whatever. This match, you know what? I'm going to play the video for you right now, because then you're going to understand the history here. Okay, well, I'm pointing the video towards you.
Very good.
Can you see it?
Yep.
Well, let me just stop for this one.
So,
so this was an episode of Saturday's main event, because they had the banner up there. I want to say it was the main event, but I'm not sure.
He didn't even need the megaphone on that one.
Right?
As a matter of fact, that wouldn't fly today. So you came out here and we have to listen to your lousy song.
Are we going to have a match here or what?
You do not deserve to get into the ring with two such men as us.
Okay, now watch this.
So we have decided that we're not going to wrestle here tonight. I'll show. Well, get up if you're not going to wrestle.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, watch what happens with the Russo brothers.
I love Gorilla Monsoon. He's so angry.
See, you see, watch. Okay, that's the first shot, right? Shawn Michaels. Now watch what they do next. And there we go. And that's where you got this SummerSlam match.
Okay. Very good. That makes sense.
So, and I don't remember because it said tonight. So that was actually part of Sunday's main event.
Very cool.
All right. So
the professor was teaching me. I'm sorry. I was paying attention. That's why I wasn't talking very much.
Right. I mean, Ben has questions. I have answers. So I have to answer my young Padawan's questions.
Exactly. Very, very well explained. Next up we have scrolling down.
It was the Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude, and you know what? This is terrible that what they did. Like you gave Rick Rude won the title in April, and you gave him 4 months as Intercontinental Champion. I mean, where Honky Tonk Man had a whole year.
Well, they were really trying to transfer the title onto Ultimate Warrior. This is where Ultimate Warrior really got the skyrocket push. Now, I will say, I think these two had amazing chemistry in this match. This was one of the best matches. I think it was the best match I've ever seen from Ultimate Warrior. Now, obviously, that has a lot to do with Rude as well. I mean, this was really, really good, and just the amount of interest and how hot the crowd was, and really through the entire evening, the crowd, the announcers, everything was engaging and like really, really exciting. So even if some of the matches were subpar, which we've seen plenty of those in these reviews, right? You kind of were able to get past that if you could, you know, get immersed in the energy and what such. Don't let it trick you. There were some bad matches in the 80s, let me tell you something. there were also all-time classics, I think. Obviously, this was gigantic, and really, the story of this one was the Ultimate Warrior almost getting pinned on numerous occasions, but then, like, obviously, you know, feeling the power of the Warrior, and it was, I'm not making fun of it, but it's just, I can't do the voice, so I don't even try.
Hold on. Feel the power of the Ultimate Warrior.
Jesus Christ. That was a little fucking scary. I apologize, folks. I got we're not weirdos, I promise. But you know what the Ultimate Warrior promos were like. But yeah. This was, you know, so really.
Okay, go on. I'm looking at something real quick. It has to do with the next match.
So, but there were some ref, you know, fuckery in this match as well that was blatantly obvious. Because shouldn't it be true that if, even if you're on the outside of the ring, that if you hit somebody with a belt in the back, you know, you're gonna get disqualified?
Yes.
So Jesse the Body Ventura was making that very obvious. Like, wait a minute, why isn't this a disqualification? You know, obviously, you know, he was very, like, enraged. And Tony Schiavone was like, it's on the outside of the ring.
Hold on. Did the match start yet?
Yeah, it has.
Well, then it was in the match. It wasn't before the match. It was before the match. It would have been different.
Yeah. So it was in the match. So it was just like, and then Jesse was like, you know, if somebody shoots you with a gun outside the ring, is that okay? You know?
Right?
It's so good. Clearly this was really, really good, but at the same time, like, for me, partially, I just don't get the Ultimate Warrior. I do, but it's like, it's so out there that it's like, you know, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, but Rick Rude is quickly becoming one of my favorites, because I really hadn't, you know, obviously seen a lot of his matches. So doing this, I'm seeing a lot of Rude, and outside of his hair, you know, everything about him is just hilarious and well done. I could do without. I could do without the gimmick and the shimmy and the
hair. That's his whole character though. Without that.
But I get it, but I'm just saying, like, you know, they make it a huge deal. And so the funniest part was when Ultimate Warrior was mimicking the dance behind him, you know, as he was doing it.
I was like, don't do that.
I was so afraid. I was like, oh my God. Please stop! Don't do that. Just no.
Right.
But absolutely. Everything else was fantastic, and you really have to see the matches to understand some of this, because especially if you're a younger listener, some of this is going to go over your head. No disrespect, of course, but, you know, if you're interested to know more about what we're talking about, then I encourage you to go back on the network and watch some of this, because it's truly really cool. With that in mind, this is a good place to take a break, and we'll be right back with the rest of the show. Stay right there.
All right, we're back. So we just wrapped up the Ultimate Warrior versus Rick Rude for the Intercontinental Championship. Of course, the Ultimate Warrior defeating Rick Rude to become the 2-time Intercontinental Champion. So, Ben, the next match we have is...
Hold on, I'm scrolling, I'm sorry. So it's... What the fuck is it? Oh yeah, Andre the Giant and
the Twin Towers.
The Twin Towers, and this was sad. This was.
Why was it? Why was this?
This was one. It was bad, and two, it was very sad because, you know, if you just watch Andre as he tries to move.
Oh, yeah.
You can just see the pain.
Let me tell you. I was reading about Andre the Giant earlier this week on Google News. They had an article on him.
Yeah.
Now, throughout the career, the man used to drink. Like, he can drink 100 beers in one sitting. He wasn't alcoholic, though. The man used to drink to kill the pain that he was in.
Oh, that is so terrible.
So he didn't use to drink just to drink. He used to drink to kill the pain that he was in, that his body was in.
Oh, man, that's so sad.
Yeah.
But you know, the other aspects of the match, I mean, we also had Demolition and Jim Duggan on the other side. It was a six-man tag. You know, it was fun for the era, but just wrestling wise, I was so distracted by Andre and
go on.
You know, it's just the only thing I could keep my eyes on other than the fact that Jim Duggan had the face paint on, you know, as the American flag, and Ventura was like, that's disrespectful to the American flag. Oh my, you know. And I'm like, okay. But it was classic Jesse. Like, you just have to understand, you know, his character. You know, not only as a commentator, but as a wrestler, you know, because, you know, yeah. everybody should know that, you know, before he, you know, retired and went on for politics, he was a very good wrestler.
And he also had his own talk show segment, like Paper Spit. His was called The Body Shop.
Yes. Oh, and speaking of Rowdy Roddy Piper, he's coming up in the show as well.
So is this one of the random matches on the card?
I thought it was random.
So do you see any story in here between these six guys?
Yes, I do. But to me, there wasn't enough there.
I'm gonna show you. Okay, go on.
But maybe I'm just missing something. But then again, I have no problem admitting that I'm missing something.
No, I'm about to show you. Andre the Giant and Jim Duggan were working at a program at this time. I'm going to show you what happened on a televised episode of Wrestling Challenge. Are you ready?
Yep.
You heard what Duggan had to say after the matchup.
He did us a favor. Would you want Duggan the world champion? I certainly wouldn't.
Why, what's wrong? Look, this match hasn't even begun.
There's no bell. How do you know? Sure, there's a bell. Heppner's in there. He called the bell, didn't he?
This is a long video, so I just fast-forwarded to the main part.
Okay.
Well, look at it this way, then. If there was no bell, Costello saved himself a loss then, didn't he? Well, that was no match anyhow, Costello. Whoa, this guy's a crazy man. He's going to go down and get the ring with Andre. And Buddy said he was going to do earlier on after WrestleMania.
Oh, the body slam challenge. Okay.
No. It's not a body slam challenge.
Really concerned, don't you? You better be concerned.
This man, Hacksaw Duggan, is not afraid of you.
I've got a laugh.
Okay.
And in front of the whole world, in front of all these people,
Andre spinning away, doesn't want to have anything. Wait a minute! Ha, there's your one-on-one match right there.
So watch this. Watch what happens now.
The ref is very effective.
All right. And there it is. And that's where we get Andre the Giant and Jim Duggan program. And that's where we got this match.
Okay, very good.
Which Hacksaw said he wanted a one-on-one, but I think that's why they put Andre in a six-man tag match, because of the condition he was in at this time.
And you know, considering that this was, this was 89. I mean, can you imagine how bad he must have felt at the end? I mean, I feel just absolutely awful. But okay, so understanding that now, I can see that. But okay. I was still distracted, and to be honest with you, I would call it a subpar match.
Yeah.
This
next one was just random. What?
So this was hilarious. Because I meant to ask you a question, because you know, Ronnie Garvin, first off, he shows up in a tuxedo. I'm like, when the hell are you an announcer?
wait, Ronnie Garvin was refereeing this one, right?
No.
Okay.
He was the special guest announcer, ring announcer.
Oh, okay. I will tell you that story. I want to say there's going to be a match, but I can either tell you now or I can save it. You know what? I'm going to tell you now, because I think this is going to lead into that. Because, okay, tell me the end of it. Go through this match and tell me the end, and then I'll tell you the story.
Okay. So it was only 3:08 because Valentine tripped up Hercules and had his foot on the ropes for leverage to get the pinfall victory. But the thing that was hilarious was that Rugged Ronnie Garvin was just running him down during the introductions and the ending of the match. It felt like Huck versus Rufio, or, I'm sorry, Peter Pan versus Rufio in Hook. I mean, that's what it felt like, but very one-sided, you know, because Ronnie Garvin just destroyed Greg Valentine, and Greg Valentine's getting so pissed off, and, you know, he's having to be held back. But he can't say anything. I've never seen such a verbal shredding ever. I mean, this made John Cena and Austin Theory, or John Cena and Roman Reigns, you know, just look like child's play. It was absolutely hilarious.
Okay, so this is Rugged Ronnie Garvin's next big program. It was Ronnie Garvin in the feud with Greg Valentine, and even like Valentine was was playing the super heel, like even in the matches, Ronnie Garvin was appointed a referee at this time, and like every time he would officiate one of Valentine's matches, he was a referee that Valentine used to get in his face, and Ronnie Garvin wasn't afraid like to like go at Valentine and get right back into Valentine's face. So go on, and do you have anything more on this? I'm gonna look up Ronnie Garvin thing.
I mean, there's nothing much. Okay, more to say because
give me a minute here. I'm gonna look up the Ronnie Garvin Valentine feud. Greg so, Valentine. Okay.
It was just very. It was bad. It was really bad.
Okay, basically can't really there's really nothing. I mean, it was short lived feud, basically, like he had a problem with the knee brace. It was Valentine, I believe, was wearing a knee brace at the time, right? With a heart.
No, I didn't see a knee brace.
Okay, so that's afterwards, where Ron Garvin had a problem with the Valentine's knee brace, saying like he didn't really need it. He was using it to injure his opponents, and so Garvin had a problem with that. And so they finally ended with Garvin defeating Valentine in a submission match.
Yeah, apparently it was I'm reading here, it was as a 1990 Royal Rumble. So
yes, I was just looking at the video. So
and I mean, literally it was a nothing match. What I told you about being hilarious, that was the story of that. Other than and then next one up was Million Dollar Man versus Jimmy Snuka.
Why?
But it's like, you know, and I wasn't tripping over his name. It was like I was debating, you know, do I mention, you know, but yeah, sure. But this was horrible. I mean, I and this is where the first question comes in.
Okay.
Was this a? I know this was a comeback for Snuka, but what led to it? Because it was so bad. Like for instance,
While you're talking, I'm gonna look that up as well.
There were so many botches in this motherfucker. It was just weird. Like, you know, I can't even go through them all without sounding like I'm just reading off a piece of paper, and I don't want to do that. Because, you know,
I really can't give you anything. I'm looking up. It just seems like a random match.
Yeah,
that
so,
was put together.
So it was apparently this was a big return match for Snuka. That was
right.
What they were putting over.
Because he returned at WrestleMania 5. Which has to me, he's another one. As soon as I heard the name Jimmy Snuka, like I jumped up. I'm like, what?
So it's just, I don't know. I didn't like it. And this is a perfect example of like a snooze fest and a very sad, sad situation when a veteran is brought back and it's so obvious that they're just not the same. I mean, like, I'm not going to say that he looked horrible and, you know, because physically he was still in good shape and stuff
so
like that.
Let me ask you, you said something about Roddy Piper. What about him?
I'm trying to figure out where he came in. Give me a sec. We'll be right back, folks.
Okay, so Ben, you found where Roddy Piper came in. He came down to distract Rick Rude and cost him the Magic Hands Ultimate Warrior.
And this was hilarious, because I knew I was just blanking out for some reason, and it was driving me nuts. But yeah, Roddy Piper really shouldn't have been wearing a jockstrap. I really don't want to see his ass, but it was classic. It was classic. Roddy, I burst out laughing. That was definitely a high point.
Yeah.
And and Heenan's response to that was insanity. I love Bobby Heenan. Like, it's just, he's the best of all time. Absolutely.
Yep.
So I know that we backed up significantly, but it was just driving me nuts. And that was one of the questions that I had for Elio. So thank you, Professor Canella. I appreciate that. Now, next up we have
The main event.
yes. And here's where the questions come to pass. What in, I mean, I know the whole thing with no holds barred and just coming out, and that's why Zeus was there. But what the hell? You know, it's just the I don't understand what was
And this
it.
was his first showing. He also showed up on an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah, and I was just, it's not that I was disgusted that he was there, but it was just like I was at a loss
No,
because
I get it. I get
it
it.
was
It was
so,
weird.
weird. It was just because
Yep.
the promo that he cut, well, I should say the backstage thing with the potion that he was in, he didn't say anything. Like, he just stood there, and
Yeah.
like, you know, he's got this weird patch of hair on the side of his head, just like a nut, you know. And I don't know. I do not know. But here's a piece of trivia. Here's a entertaining tidbit. My brother came in the room while I was watching that, you know, just like hang out for a minute. And he was like, why does that guy look familiar? And I told him, well, that's the guy from the Friday series, but that's not where he recognized him from. He was like, wasn't he in The Dark Knight? Didn't he have a cameo as like a tattooed guy on the prisoner's bus when they're debating like who's gonna push the button to kill the other bus because the Joker gave him that choice? And my brother was like, it was just driving us nuts. So we looked up his you know, itinerary of movies, and sure enough, that was him.
Oh,
And
wow.
he thought that Bobby Heenan was Ric Flair because of the hair. Like, you know, it wasn't like a close-up view of his face. Like, Heenan happened to be running from one side of the ring to the other,
Yeah.
and all Will saw was what was the head. He was like, is that Ric Flair? I'm like, no. But the story of this match was, and there was a there were a bunch of interviews like with Brutus Beefcake, and the Genius had had an in-ring segment, which was awful. So I'm not like, what the no. So I'm not even gonna subject you to that. But the story here was that was Sherry was trying to figure out a way to, like, kill Hulk Hogan. That's why they were doing the potion, and there was big heat between Sherry and Elizabeth. And I was very confused at one point because, it was very gentle, of course. So you could see that Hogan was protecting her, but Hogan put his hands on Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I was kind of uncomfortable with that because I'm very, like, the portrayal of intergender violence, I know it was done in ECW a lot, but I'm just, that's one thing I'm not comfortable with. And considering that Hulk Hogan was, like, the ultimate babyface.
Yeah.
I just, that was, like, weird. But it was done because earlier in the match, Sherry had done the Missy Hyatt spot with the loaded purse. Of course, Elizabeth had an issue with that. And apparently they had big issues with each other. So long story short, Sherry ended up getting knocked out, quote unquote, and Beefcake cut her ponytail off. And the match itself was good. But it just didn't make sense to me because, you know, I couldn't get past Zeus and Beefcake obviously didn't belong in the main event. No disrespect.
There's a reason why he was there.
Okay, can you tell me why?
I will tell you that right now. Give me a minute. I'm just setting up. Okay. So, on the main event, when the Mega Powers exploded, and Savage hit Hogan with the championship belt, and then was beating him up and, like, laying into him, Beefcake ran in and, like, pulled Savage off Hogan. However, you notice how Beefcake had a haircut, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
He was a guest on the Brother Love show, okay?
Oh my god.
And Brother I have Love. And I have a clip to play for you after. I have a clip here to play, and here we go. Let me just adjust the volume. So, okay, speak it up, okay. And here we go.
You think he really means that, Jesse?
I think he looks honest, McMahon.
Wouldn't you, Jesse? Definitely. Brutus likes to pick on people he knows he can take.
Brother Barber.
I don't think you want to sell hair.
Brother Love. I can't believe it. The so-called macho man, Randy Savage, has chosen as his new manager that sleazy... Slimy!
Oh, I think we'll get this done. Overdressed
sweat hog!
Whoa, baby!
Who has the audacity to call herself, of all things, Sensational Sherry? You know, I can't think of anything sensational about her at all. As a matter of fact, That's it. She shouldn't be called sensational. She should be known as Scary Sherry.
That is so bad.
He's going to have this capacity. Crowd going here in a second.
He don't like girls. McMahon, he don't like girls, does he?
He's got a roll on this capacity crowd.
Are you dying?
Who's that?
Whoa. Watch this.
Sensational Sherry. Beefcake's having fun. Now, would you be afraid of that, McMahon? Afraid of...
I'm like that.
She's dressed. She is scary, isn't she? Oh, my goodness! He had it coming.
Alright, so yeah, see, I knew we'd get it in time. We still have 3 minutes. I think this is a perfect time to go into commercial, and we'll be back to wrap things up. Alright, we are back. Ben, is that it? Is that all we have for the main event?
I think so. Listen, I know that it was big for the time, and I get it. And the crowd was hot. You know what I mean? But like, for somebody like me who looks at match quality, in addition to all the external stuff, mm-hmm. You know, just overall, I didn't think it was that good. But the excitement of the crowd and it's just the environment made up for any large problems, in my opinion. Overall, what would you rate the show?
And I love SummerSlam, especially these early ones. This one, looking back at it, the main event was just okay, wasn't the greatest. For me, I'd give this a show a 7.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think that that's all we have, and with that in mind...
Well, hold on. I traveled 3 months into the future. And our next show is Survivor Series 89, another one of my favorites. These early Survivor Series were so much fun.
Cool.
However, go on.
No, I'm just saying cool. I can't wait.
However, I also saw what movie will be coming out around November, around the end of November. And I'm going to go see this movie I've been waiting 4 years to see. And that is Back to the Future Part 2.
Oh, well, you know, not to break kayfabe, but I just absolutely love Back to the Future 1 and 2.
Now, a quick story about Back to the Future. Around this time, you know how on the back of cereal boxes they have all these fun things you get for kids, right?
Yes.
So like my mom used to buy Rice Krispies, so on the back of the box of this one that she bought, there was this contest to design your vision of what 2015 will look like. It was a Back to the Future 2 contest to design what your vision of 2015.
Oh, God. And here we are, well past that now.
Right? Like, I mean, I didn't do it right, because the thing about this is you have to mail stuff in, and I'm like, right? You never know. You don't know who's going to get it or if they're even going to get it and stuff. So yeah. I'm like, but like, it's just cool to look at the back of the box and see all these things that they have.
Yeah, definitely.
So that is a movie we will be watching next weekend. So of course, Survivor Series 89. And this time, the difference with this one, teams have names, Ben.
They actually
have names. It's not just like 5-on-5. It's like, I will give you a perfect example. The Hulkamaniacs versus the Million Dollar Team. The Rude Brood versus Roddy's Rowdies.
Oh my God.
These are actual team names.
Holy shit.
It's gonna be fun.
I have no doubt. I'm very much looking forward to it. And we hope you are too, for sure.
And with that, we will say goodnight for this week, and we will be back next week for Survivor Series 89. Ben, say for Tuesday Timeline, I'm Elio, he's Ben. Ben, say goodnight to the fans.
Good night to the fans. No, I'm kidding. Thanks for hanging out with us, and I know it was a long conversation, but we are having so much fun, and you know, our fandom comes out a little bit. But
yeah, I had to answer my young Padawan's questions, and what better way to do it with video footage that exactly. I got to witness when it aired.
Yes, exactly, and I think the audio adds something to the show as well. So hopefully you guys are enjoying it, and any technical issues that may have come through just a little bit, you know, we'll be sure to fix that for the next one. Until then, see you next time.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.